Hello. In this audio snippet, we are going to continue talking about music. As we have been saying, we're living in the days that American music died because it's going nowhere. But before we continue talking about music and getting to a song that we wanted to get to in the previous recording, we wanted to go through several headlines, and they may seem unrelated, but I feel this need to talk about them, and I do feel that at the end of the day, they are, as I always say, part of the same thread or theme, in one way or another. We'd like to share three headlines first that are interrelated. The first one is a news story that was posted on the dailymail.com, and it was posted on the 21st of November, so of 2023, so like 4 days ago. In the headline, 4 days ago from the time of this recording, the headline says Melissa Barrera is fired from Scream 7 over social media posts critical of Israel amid ongoing war with Hamas. Barrera, 33. That's interesting that that's her age, and hopefully when we get to the song that we want to get to, you will see why. It's kind of ironic that that's her age. Barrera, 33, played Sam Carpenter in this year's Scream 7 and 2022 Scream. Scream 6, sorry. In this year's Scream 6. She had labeled Israel as a colonized land in one of her social media posts. Spyglass said it had zero tolerance for anti-Semitism or the incitement of hate in any form. And Spyglass apparently seems to be the company that is producing this film. Now, the film to me at the end of the day is irrelevant, because just as American music has died, American entertainment in general has died because the creativity, all of that has been destroyed, because America died between September 6th and September the 18th of 2023. So we're going to see a diminishing productivity and a creativity that will just flatten out. There is, like, as we've said before, an afterglow that we'll see. So it's this like those fluorescent things that receive light, and then when you turn off the light, they glow for a while. And then eventually that light fades out. Well, that's kind of what we'll be seeing over the next few years, and I'm not sure exactly how long that will be, but it will be clear as time goes by that the creativity is going to be less and less and less. And I think it's already very evident. And that's why also it's not a coincidence that America died, just as all the writers in Hollywood were on strike. They had this protracted industrial action, and they were not working for quite a while. And then they eventually, after America died, just a short while afterwards, they came to an agreement and they all went back to work. I'm not sure if they fully returned, but from last I heard, they seem to have reached an agreement. But it's not a coincidence that they had stopped working just as America was finishing out its days. And that's a figure of how the creativity will just be gone. And that's why you're seeing just so many sequels and repeats of things and shows that were from the past just being brought back to life. Just like Frasier, for example, that situation comedy, American sitcom that ran for 11 years and that had a lot of very good writing, very good comedy, and unfortunately, Frasier decided to reboot the series, and now it's with a completely different cast, because I think he's the only one surviving from the original cast, but it's not the same. And the thing is that that's what you're going to see, just sequels, repeating old things over and over again, and there's not going to be any really new creativity. And that's why I guess it's not a coincidence that in this story we're talking about someone filming Scream's being fired from Scream 7. And this year there was Scream 6, and in 2022 there was just Scream. So I'm not sure if there was a Scream 2, 3, or 4, or you know what in the world's going on there, but again, it's that just repetition. We made Scream some years ago, kind of worked, so let's just do it again and again and again, because the creativity is dead. But the reason why we wanted to talk about this is not so much about Scream or Melissa Barrera per se. I feel outraged when I read a headline like that. And you may say, oh, so you're supporting Hamas. No, I despise Hamas, as you may know from the previous recordings, and I curse them. And I also, as I've said before, I curse Israel too, because they have brought this on themselves, not because of how they treat Palestinians, aka Jordanians. That's not what is bad about Israel. It's the fact that Israel does not understand its place, doesn't understand that it's there because, not because of them, but despite themselves. And they haven't acknowledged that, and they keep using the people that they reject. They reject them, but at the same time, they receive help from them, you know, from the Christians, from the followers of the supposed false Messiah, from their perspective. And they feel that they have been able to survive all these years as a nation since 1948 because of how good and great they are. And instead of realizing they have had mercy given to them, and instead of acknowledging that and submitting after 70 years, as we said in 2018, it's as if the truth said, enough, I will remove my covering from off of you. And there's no protection. That umbrella protection that Israel used to have is gone. So both sides are cursed. One more than the other. In this case, Hamas way more than Israel. But the point here is not so much that whether I agree or not, do not agree. I am outraged that we're now living in these times, where you post something somewhere on the internet that has nothing to do with your work, and then suddenly you're punished for it. And I find it interesting that, because in the past, when people write horrible things against conservatives or people who are on the quote right, they seem to be given a pass and it's okay. But if someone criticizes someone from the left, they get destroyed. Just look at what happened to Roseanne Barr. In America, you may know about her story. She rebooted her show. Interestingly enough, she had a show in the 1990s called Roseanne that was very popular. And then she rebooted the show a few years ago. That same thing, that same symptom that we have, not just rebooting things. She brought back the whole cast, almost the entire cast. And then she made a comment about somebody, because she's a Trump supporter, she made a critical comment against the woman running things behind the Obasser administration. Valerie Jarrett, she was the one really running everything. She is the bitch behind the show. The matriarchal bitch behind the show. And she made a negative comment about her, and it was deemed racial. It was not racial, really, but it was treated like that. And then she got fired from her own show, and they renamed the show to something like The Connors, because that's the name of the surname of the family. But the thing is that she was ostracized and vilified and her career destroyed because of one tweet. I think it was a tweet on Twitter when it used to be called Twitter. And now it's called X for some odd reason. But the thing is that it's interesting to me that now something that would seem to be a comment that seems to be kind of left-leaning is being criticized. And now she even lost her job, this Melissa Barrera. And I find it interesting that in this context, in something that you would think would not cause her harm, it's causing her harm. And you know why it is? Because Israel is cursed. So these people react to these things. I don't know how to explain it. If Israel was really just the victim and was not partly responsible for the attack because of what we've said about Israel in the 70 years and so forth. If Israel were righteous, the righteous one here, I can assure you, fully righteous one, then Melissa Barrera would have never lost her job. But because Israel is also wrong, suddenly then it becomes a problem. It's like the opposite reaction. It's as if these people know there's something unrighteous about Israel, and therefore they decide to defend it. And that's why I've seen so much support for Israel now, that would seem contrary to, you know, the leanings of the left. And the left has also been protesting heavily here in America in favor of Hamas. But what I'm trying to say is that the support for Israel is greater now because Israel is in a state of unrighteousness. It's kind of ironic, but that's the world we're living in right now. The thing is that there's something wrong when we're in a society where you can't say anything. And where your job, your life sustenance is being threatened because of anything you say online that has, or to your friends, or on a TV show, or a video surfaces of you saying something at some point, and then suddenly you get fired for it. That's the free speech is gone. You know, in my workplace, for example, where I work, they sometimes exchange comments about that are left leaning and so forth. And I know that the culture in general is very contaminated and very left leaning. And I always stay away from all of that. I don't say anything for or against because I'm not there to promote any ideology. I'm not there to say anything. I'm hired to do something that has nothing to do with politics or anything like that. And I always go, well, what if they knew what I think? And I know that if they knew what I thought, they would let me go. Even if I was a great employee or doing great things, they wouldn't care. So you have to kind of stay silent. But the people who are on the left, they are free to spew out their nonsense, even in the workplace. And you're just supposed to stay quiet. So this is the environment we're living in. And by the way, when I stay silent, it's not out of fear. It's just that I don't want to. This is not the hill I want to die on. I don't care. I know this is the place where I have to work. That's what I say to myself. I'm not just saying it to myself. I know it's the truth. It's the place where the truth has placed me to be in. And I am there, and I'm doing what I have to do. And I am fighting the fight, but it's not there. I'm not going to be fighting for no reason at all in a context that is irrelevant to me. But if they do come into my territory and try to force me to talk, then I will talk and I will shut them up and as they say, bitch slap them as needed. You know, as long as they don't mess with me, you know, it's okay. You know, there's a song that from the 1990s that has a line that says, "So please stay off my back, or I will attack, and you don't want that." So that's kind of my attitude. You know, please stay off my back, or I will attack, and you don't want that. So, but this is the environment we're living in, and no one says anything about it, about this. And the liberals, the conservatives, you know, would rejoice reading this story, but, you know, when it's done to them, they complain. But when it's done to someone that they despise, they rejoice. And no one says anything. No one has ever said, it's such an obvious thing happening all over the place in our culture, in society nowadays, especially here in America, that you would think that someone would think, you know, we have to pass legislation against this, where you should not be allowed to be fired from your job for saying something political or religious or whatever, or philosophical that that is displeasing to the company you work for. Unless, of course, what you said is directly related to your job. So, for example, if you're working for the Anti-Defamation League, you know, it's stupid. Well, I don't know if it's stupid, but it sometimes behaves stupidly. The Anti-Defamation League is an anti-Semitism kind of organization here in America. And so if you work for the Anti-Defamation League and then you say, you know, death to the Jews on some Twitter post, then obviously that, you know, that would justify you being fired from your job because clearly your views are contrary to the goals, the direct goals or raison d'être of the company or the organization you work for. And for example, if you do something in your personal life that's directly related to your job and it's negative, then the company has the right to let you go. Like, for example, Pete Rose, that bastard baseball player who was gambling and betting on baseball games. He was let go of, he was, you know, kind of ostracized and, from Major League Baseball. And even though he has the most hits, in baseball history, in America, he's not in the Hall of Fame and he always complains about that. But, and I always despised him, by the way, when I was a kid, I despised him. There was something wrong with him. There was a certain arrogance with him. And I'm digressing a great deal, but I do have to say that he had it coming because back in 1971, in an All-Star game, he was known, he's famed or infamous for having terminated the career of a very promising catcher. They were playing the All-Star game, which is kind of a friendly game between the American League and the National League. I don't know if they still play it anymore. I couldn't care less. But in those days, it was just, you know, a friendly game that was played in the middle of the season. And there was one play where he was rounding third and heading home. And the throw was coming to home. And he was trying to beat the throw to home plate. And he just directly ran over the catcher who was at home plate, you know, at home plate waiting for the throw. It just ran over him, and I think he separated the guy's shoulder. He ran over him like a truck, like a lorry, just pounding him and to the ground, and that was a career-ending injury for this very promising catcher, all-star catcher. He didn't need to do that. It was just a friendly game. It was not like they were the World Series was on the line. But he always played hard. He was called Charlie Hustle and all that. And he justified it as, oh, I always play hard. But it was this arrogance about him, just effervescent arrogance. I always despised him. I only saw him towards the end of his career because I was too young to see him in his prime. But every time I would see him, I'd just cringe. I hated this. I despised the man. And then a few years later, he was discovered in some scandal, gambling scandal, and was banned from baseball. And he's also been banned from the Hall of Fame. And thankfully so. But so that's a case where you do something in your personal life that is somehow related to your job, and then yes, you should get fired. But if you do something in your personal life that has nothing to do with your job, it should be illegal for you to be fired, because it's a part of your free speech, and it's also part of your right to a personal domain. There are two rights involved there, the right to life and the right to a personal domain. The right to life in the sense of, you know, the right to just have free speech, which is part of the right to life. And the right to a personal domain is there also because you have the right to have a place where you're your own king or your own queen, if you're a woman, your own monarch. So where you have the right to decide what happens and doesn't happen. And if you can't even have the right to express yourself or say things or declare things in your own domain, then you have no domain in your personal domain. So it's outrageous that this is happening, and it's so sad that there's no one thinking about passing a law against this sort of thing. It should not be allowed. So even though I completely disagree with this idiot, Melissa Barrera, I'm outraged that she lost her job because she said something political that has nothing to do with Scream 7. I don't think Scream 7 is the story of the conflict between Israel and Palestine and the Jordanians, aka Palestinians. So that's what we wanted to say about that. And by the way, she's a Mexican star. So she's Mexican. Okay. And there's a picture of her here, and she has arrogance just oozing out of her face. But even so, she should not have been, she or anyone should ever be fired for saying something that has nothing to do with their job. And it's so sad that no one is even worrying about that. Everybody, pardon my French, bitches and moans about free speech being eroded, but no one does anything concrete to deal with it. It's just idle talk. Everybody complaining and no one saying, okay, there's a problem here. And how do we fix it? How do we get to the root of the problem and resolve it? No. Everyone just complains complains about the people doing things. So we have become a nation run by people, not a nation run by laws. See, it should not matter that we have who we have in power, who is has a position of authority. We complain about the misdeeds of the person in the position, but we don't say, okay, we should be a nation run by laws. That's what rule of law means, law and order. A nation being run by law. So, okay, so there's a problem. There's something missing in our law system that is allowing certain people to do certain things when they shouldn't. So our complaint is, oh, let's remove that person and replace it with someone else. Just like when conservatives complain about liberals doing all the terrible things they're doing when they're in power. So their solution is, oh, let's elect conservatives and then the problem will go away. No. We should have a system where no matter who is in power, bad things are not going to happen. Or at least we're going to greatly limit the misdeeds of whoever, you know, reaches power if they're evil. Everybody's just complaining because no one wants to change the underlying foundation. No one cares about that. So, so that's number one. And we took a long time talking about that, but I do believe it's important. And the second thing, the second story we wanted to talk about is kind of related. It's a headline from the gatewaypundit.com. It was posted on the 21st of November, 2023, and the headline says, "Outrageous, 75-year-old pro-life activist with significant health issues convicted for peacefully protesting abortion clinic faces up to 11 years in prison." This lady, her name is Paulette Harlow, who is 75 years old, participated in a peaceful protest at an abortion clinic in 2020 and didn't hurt anyone, but she can potentially get 11 years in prison and up to $250,000, in other words, $250,000 in fines. Harlow is the ninth defendant convicted by the Bite Me regime related to the peaceful abortion protest. And we won't get into the details of that, of the rest of the story. But again, we see free speech being curtailed. So this lady who, a 75-year-old lady, she didn't kill anyone or do anything harmful to anyone. She just participated in a peaceful protest, and she's facing 11 years in prison. So that's the situation we're in. And like in the UK, where you can't stand in front of, like that lady that was arrested, I think she was eventually released. There was a lady who was just standing in front of an abortion clinic. And she was just standing there. She wasn't even mumbling a prayer or lifting her hands and, doing a show or showing us like a picket sign or anything like that. She was just standing there in front of the clinic, and I think she had her head bowed down and she was just silently praying to herself, and the police arrested her in the UK. And as I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but when I put myself in her shoes, because I've done that, actually. I've done something similar in a different context, not related specifically to abortion. It's a kind of a long story, so I won't go into that. But when I did it, it was not a silent prayer, shall we say. It was a little more vocal. But the thing is that I put myself in her situation, and I would go, if someone, a policeman comes to me and says, "Hey, what are you doing here? Are you praying?" I would say, "Well, so you want to get into my thoughts? Yes. What are you praying? Because if you're silently praying, if you're thinking about praying, you're thinking a prayer that is illegal." Then I would just say, "Well, you want to get into my thoughts? You know what I'm thinking right now? I'm thinking that you are a fascist and a moron. So what do you think about that? Am I going to go to jail for that?" Because that would not be lying, because at that moment, that's where my thoughts would be, because he interrupted my prayer. I'm putting myself in her shoes. And then I would make some other comments. "Well, I think your wife is, is really, must have a very terrible life being married to a worthless person like you. Okay, so what other thoughts do you want me to express that I'm thinking inside of me right now?" So I would just inundate the guy with all these thoughts that are coming into my head. And I would challenge him. Have I said anything that is against the law? And I'd say, "Okay, prove to me that I am, that I've broken the law by the things that I'm thinking," because he can't get into my thoughts. So I wouldn't say, how can I say it? I would not go into this discussion of I'm praying or not praying. I'd say, "You're getting into my thoughts. Well, here are my thoughts." And that's how I would resolve the issue. I would maybe end up in jail, but or maybe not, because I think that the policeman would have nothing to say to me. Because he would probably say, "Are you here praying?" So then that's where I would get into the thing. "So you want to get into my thoughts?" And that's where I would start expressing certain thoughts about him and his family. And challenge him to see if that was illegal. But that's the state where we're in. There is no freedom of speech, and this recording is supposed to be about music, and it is related because music is an expression of the soul. So we're living in an environment where the soul is not allowed to express itself. So obviously that will lead to a lower quality of music. And the other headline we wanted to share very quickly is another headline on thegatewaypundit.com. And it says, restaurant that ejected family of Trump spokeswoman closes. This was posted on the 22nd of November, 2023. So what happened was that Sarah, I think her name is Sarah Huckabee, Sanders Huckabee or something like that. She's the daughter of Mike Huckabee, who used to be, she was the former, he was the former governor of Arkansas here in America. And he was a presidential candidate in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe in 2016. Very nice guy. He's a Christian, you know, very likable fellow, and so forth. But I really don't have anything positive or negative to say about him. He's just a nice guy. But I really don't know what else to say, to be frank. I don't know why. But the thing is that his daughter was the spokesperson or speaker, White House spokesperson, I think, during the Trump years, for part of the Trump years. She went into a restaurant with some other people one day. I think it was in, I forget exactly where it was. I think it was in the D.C. area, in Lexington, Virginia. That's where it happened. And in a place called The Red Hen, which is ironic because there was nothing red in terms of conservatism about the place. But she went into the restaurant to eat. And then in the middle of it, she was told by the restaurant people, the owner, I think, or someone from the restaurant, that she had to leave. And when she asked why, they told her that it was because one of the other customers complained that they were offended by her presence in the restaurant. And she was kicked out. And she didn't, you know, I don't know what I would have done, that's the environment we're in. So because she was of a certain point of view that was unacceptable to the fascist liberals, because they are the fascists, the ones who are imposing themselves on people constantly. You can't even just breathe or exist on earth if you are if inside your head you're in disagreement with them. Because if Sarah Huckabee Sanders has gone into the restaurant with a loud megaphone, with a tannoy, just started proclaiming conservative values, then I can understand her being kicked out. But she just went in there to eat, so the thoughts were in her head. But that was not, and she wasn't probably even thinking about anything political. She just wanted to eat. And that was not good enough for liberals. Well, liberals, you have to submit to them at every facet. You can't, even if they know that inside of you, you don't agree with them, they will try to destroy you. I mean, that's how fascistic they are. So that's another example of the suppression of the freedom of speech. There's no freedom of the spirit to just speak and say what needs to be said, even if it's wrong, because we have suppressed that. And when this happened, this was a big headline. I remember when it happened. Why wasn't any legislation passed? Now that the Republicans are in power, and at least in the House, why hasn't anyone passed a bill making such an action illegal? Where you can't be, see, if she had been kicked out for being black, that all hell would have broken loose, and lawsuits and everything, and she and all that. But you can be discriminated against because of your political views. You can lose your job because of your political views, and no one, you know, is guilty under the law. And so the thing is that so no one does anything. See, this thing happens. Everyone complains. The conservatives complain. This Gateway Pundit website complained. Everybody in the conservative side complained, but no one did anything specific about it. Because no one is dealing with the concept of rights in their essence. We've talked about the five rights. No one is there. It's just if because their whole world is limited to the Constitution. The Constitution, American Constitution, as it stands right now, is everything. It has its perfection. So there's nothing else to think about. So they don't think in terms of defining rights and defining boundaries and things like that, clearing them, making the boundaries clear, and establishing laws to prevent this, so that we can be a nation ruled by laws, not by people. So here, Sarah Huckabee Sanders Huckabee, or Huckabee Sanders, was at the whim of the restaurant owner, who said, you know, I don't like you. And clearly the restaurant owner was also a nut job liberal, and that's why she let him. And I think she even bragged about having kicked Sarah Huckabee out, as if she had done this great Rosa Parks type thing for the freedom of liberal values and so forth. So Sarah Huckabee was at the whim of people, and that's, we can't be a nation ruled by people. We're a nation by the whims of people, but by laws. She should not have felt the freedom to do what she did. If there had been a law that had said you can't do that, and you're going to get a lawsuit, or you can be even shut down if you are doing that to people. So that's the state of things where we are, and we've really spent a lot of time with those three headlines, but we'll try to move on quickly. So we want to talk about some things related to Trump, and I'll say them very quickly, or I'll try to say them very quickly. On the Daily Mail, on the 19th of November, 2023, they posted a headline, a story that said Donald Trump suggests he'll do trade deal with Taliban if he's reelected in 2024 to regain control of Bagram airfield to keep an eye on China. And the only thing we want to say very quickly is, again, so that's why this man is not worthy of any second chance. The country's dead anyway, but this just proves how dead he is, because he's still in the art of the deal thing. Doing a deal with the devil, in this case, almost literally with the Taliban, just to regain control of some airfield. So he's still thinking that in that way. So how can anyone from the conservative side expect him to be any different if he ever got reelected? How would he be different in his dealings with the Democrats when he's constantly dealing with whoever he can deal with, because he believes that is how you gain power. Everything with him is leverage, leveraging in the deals. And I don't know if that's one of the principles in his book, Art of the Deal. I've never read it, couldn't care to read it. But I'm getting the sense that the word leverage must be very important in his head. And that's why at one point he was even talking about being more less radical about abortion, being anti-abortion, and we just wanted to use what we've gained as leverage to negotiate with the Democrats. So he always sees the world in terms of that, and that's why he's not worthy of any second chance. And the fact that he's the leader of the conservatives is just proof of how dead we are. The other headline we wanted to mention very quickly, and I'll try to be quick with this, but I don't know how I can say this quickly. It was on November 19th, 2023, the headline on the gatewaypundit.com said, breaking, conservative Javier Milei is elected the new president of Argentina in a landslide victory. And I'll try to be very quickly. You may already know about him if you're listening to this around the time of this recording. I don't know, 5 years from now, will people remember who Javier Milei is? I don't know. But the thing is that he is a... If you see a picture of him, if you look at his eyes, he looks like he's crazy. And there's a picture of him with a lifting up a chainsaw over his head, literally, and it's not photoshopped. It, he took a chainsaw to some rally, and he was promising to cut down some stuff if he got elected. So that's why he brought the chainsaw. But the thing is that I was surprised that he won the election. To be frank, I thought that the leftists in Argentina were going to do some election fraud. But apparently, Bite Me is so busy with the Israeli Gaza stuff and giving money to Ukraine and all that, that he just didn't have time to send people to Argentina to teach them how to do proper election fraud the way they did with Bolsonaro in Argentina, in Brazil. And I think what happened was that they thought this crazy guy was not going to win, that he had no chance of winning. So I think that was another factor in why the Democrats here in America did not help the Argentinians enough, the leftist Argentinians, to cheat in this election. I believe that's what happened. And so he won by like a 56-44 margin. It was a landslide. And that made me think, okay, is Argentina coming back to life? And it makes me wonder, to be frank, it really makes me wonder. And then I thought, well, interesting, Taylor Swift, her first stop in her Eras tour outside of America, her first international stop was in Argentina. And, you know, and we talked about that before, so I don't know what that all means. But I was listening to a video of Javier Milei. He was in an interview with someone, a lady down there in Argentina. And I listened to the, because there was a link on one of these conservative websites to that video, and I watched it, and I was stunned to hear him talk, because he had this fire in his eyes. And he was saying something about, it was all in Spanish, but there were subtitles, but I could understand what he was saying in his own language. And he was saying that you don't give the liberals an inch, because if you give them an inch, they take the whole yard. And he kept using these words that I cannot repeat. He was using the word excrement, but... it's a very it's the Spanish version of the bad word for excrement in English, but it's very offensive when I hear it, when I hear it in Spanish or French, or because in French it's very similar, it starts with an M. It really bothers me. But he kept using that word, that the leftists are this M word over and over again. But aside from the unpleasant language, you could say, or vocabulary, it was kind of inspiring to hear someone who's not going to back down. Unlike Trump, he's being called the Argentinian Trump, but I think that he is better than Trump in the sense that he is. He seemed, at least in his wording, he is even more vocal and aggressive than Trump. I don't know if he's going to back down once he becomes elected and does a Trump on the Argentinians and backs away from all his things. But maybe not. I don't know. So I don't know what that all means for Argentina. To me, Argentina is still dead. But it's interesting that this happened. And the contrast between this Milei, this Argentinian Malay, and Trump, you know, talking about doing deals with the Taliban. To me, it's like night and day, this contrast of these two people. So it's sad that in Argentina, a country, a third world country that is dead, has been dead longer than America, there are people speaking with more conviction than here in America. And it's interesting that he won by 56-44, but I don't know if it's just the Argentinians being tired of the destruction that was being done to their economy. And I don't know if eventually they will become weary of him, and the leftists in the Argentinians is going to rise up again and they're going to hate him and maybe oust him, or who knows? I don't know, but it is something to think about, and I really don't know what to make of that. But as I was meditating and asking, you know, the truth, you know, is this a sign that Argentina is coming back to life? Then, like the next day, almost the very next day, I saw this headline, and it's from the Daily Mail again, and it was posted on the 22nd of November, 2023, it said Aston Villa goalkeeper Emiliano Martinez launches himself at a policeman and manhandles him to slap his baton away after Brazilian police charged at Argentina fans ahead of a violent World Cup qualifier. The context is that I think Argentina were playing in Brazil at the Maracanã Stadium. Whenever Argentina and Brazil play in South America, that's like the super classic, you could say, the two biggest teams in South America, and it's always a big deal when they play each other. And apparently some melee broke out in the audience, and the police came, and then this so that apparently stopped the match. And Emiliano Martinez, the I was gonna say Mexican goalkeeper, and I have a reason. I don't know why, just it was about to come out of my mouth, and I know it's not a coincidence or just me misspeaking, but he's technically the Argentinian goalkeeper, but he behaves like a Mexican, and if you have ever watched Mexican football and the Mexican national team, you would know why I'm saying that, because Mexican national teams are they're always fighting. They're always getting into brawls, and they're very unprofessional, very arrogant, very evil. So this guy came and he manhandled a policeman. Imagine the disrespect of this son of a bitch, a worthless bastard boy, Hispanic rubbish. And he slapped the baton away from the policeman. He's in Brazil. You know, no respect even for the country. Like, I don't give a damn. That's how blasphemous Hispanics are. They have no respect for touching anything holy or sacred. They don't care. So they are worthless rubbish. But the thing is, when I began to read this story, I began to remember, oh, I think I know who this son of a bitch is. And pardon my French. I think this is the same goalkeeper who was... who played in the World Cup for Argentina, and you know what we've said about Argentina in the World Cup in 2022, the last World Cup that will ever be played. Anything else after that doesn't matter, as we've said a million times. And I remember watching him in that World Cup final, and the evil that oozed out of him. I cannot explain it to you. There was evil in that son of a bitch, worthless bastard. And the fact that this happened one day after I was meditating on Javier Milei, to me was like confirmation. No, it's just a mirage, because at the heart of it, Argentina is still evil. The people of Argentina are evil. There might be a core of people there in Argentina that have a hope of something good. I remember when he got elected, Javier Milei, there was another headline that I saw, and somebody posted a comment or a tweet or something that said in Spanish, "God help our nation." Like there's a light of hope. And may this be God helping our nation, or something like that, as if to say, you know, maybe this is a sign of God having mercy on us, or something like that. When Javier Milei got elected, but so I don't know. There's a core of people there who might be rescuable. I don't know. I really don't know what's going on there now. But when I saw this the next day, I said, oh, yeah, Argentina, the same evil that I saw back in 2014 when I knew for certain that Argentina was dead. It's like it's there. It's not going away, and I don't think it's going away. And that's why it is, at the end of the day, a mirage. And another story I wanted to mention, and I could be wrong on Argentina, I don't know. Maybe I even began to think, maybe our death will be their life. Like, you know, it's as if, because we died and died so dramatically, maybe that will bring some life back to them. And I began to think, maybe that's why Taylor Swift went down there. I don't know. But I still think that we are both dead, America and Argentina. And this is just a temporary thing. But I could be wrong. I don't know. As I shared with you there, I had what you could call something like a vision or something of River Plate Stadium when I was a young kid. And I'm still thinking, what does that all mean? But I don't know. But it was there was a negative element in that, if you could call it vision or whatever, that I kept wondering all this time why it happened. And I do believe that it got fulfilled, that quote vision, when Taylor Swift arrived at River Plate Stadium to do her concert. So it was kind of like a negative. What I thought at the beginning to be a positive vision was actually a negative thing. And then I finally felt like there was an explanation to that negative element in the vision. I couldn't understand why I was where I was when I was watching that thing. So I don't know. I really don't know what's going on there. But I wanted to read another headline here that says, Dutch Trump Geert Wilders shocks Netherlands with huge election win. Hard right politician who wants a vote on Nexit to leave the EU and vow to tackle tsunami of asylum seekers must now try and form a coalition. So this was a headline of the DailyMail.com posted on the 22nd of November. So there's another Malay, maybe not with the same brashness wildness, but there's another Dutch, another Trump quote surfacing, and it's in Holland, this Geert Wilders. And so it's so sad when, you know, you read these headlines, they always say hard right. Well, they never say hard left, you know, when it's a communist like Lula or people like that. But when it's somebody who is not, who has convictions and has fire in his belly, they automatically label him as a hard right guy. And this is on the Daily Mail, which is not necessarily a quote liberal outlet. So it's kind of sad that they always do that branding. But I don't know what that means either. And interestingly enough, Holland and Argentina played the final of the World Cup in 78 in River Plate Stadium when Argentina won their first World Cup. And first and maybe only legitimate World Cup, because they won again in 86 in Mexico. But we all know that Maradona used his hand, the hand of Satan, to beat England and make it to the final. So it was a tainted World Cup for them. They cheated their way to victory. Even though outside of Maradona, the rest of the team was a very outstanding team of very good people, I would dare say. They had some outstanding quality people. Maradona was the only one who was morally flawed, you could say, in a big way. Interesting, Argentina and Holland, the two teams that played the only World Cup final ever played at River Plate Stadium, they are coming up with trumps of their own. So we'll see how that goes. As we flounder in America in doing compromise, you know, the art of the deal, with Trump constantly thinking in terms of negotiations, there are other people in other places who are rising up with conviction and saying, we shall not compromise. We'll see how it goes with them. And this goes with this other headline that says exclusive, Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift romance is good for football and the haters should lay off the Chiefs star tight end, say NFL greats Emmitt Smith and Charles Woodson. This was posted on the dailymail.com again and on the 18th of November. And this just angers me because Emmitt Smith is an American football player who played for the Dallas Cowboys back in the 90s. And he ended up becoming a born-again Christian. And he ended up being a big member, a well-known member of that church by T.D. Jakes, run by this bastard called T.D. Jakes in the Dallas area. And he and another guy called Michael Irvin, another teammate, they became members of this church, and they became like born-again Christians, and very, very openly so. But that, to me, the fact that he's saying this stuff, you know, and he has no understanding of Taylor Swift, of what she represents, and all of this. He has no understanding of what Travis Kelce represents. Travis Kelce is constantly on television here in America on these adverts, these commercials, where he's promoting the injection, the mod RNA gene therapy injection that has killed so many people around the world and caused so many miscarriages, and lowered the life expectancy of millions and millions and millions of people. And so he has no understanding, and he's praising these two with no awareness of what it all represents. So that's what I wanted to say. So, and this guy who's supposed to have a connection with his God, and who goes to this big church with this big preacher, has no clue about anything. And in Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin, I kept always seeing this constant willingness to compromise, not having a strict conviction about things. And they are a reflection of the pastor, the bastard pastor, you know, T.D. Jakes, who has compromised his integrity so many times. It is ridiculous. And we talked about him last time, I believe. So we're in the art of the deal here in America. And in the meantime, we have other people, rising firebrand people, rising up elsewhere. Now we want to say these other things, I do believe we have some time to say them very quickly, On the 24th of November, on the gatewaypundit.com, there was a headline that says, New Jersey Mall evacuated over bomb threat during Black Friday. And it was a New Jersey Mall in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And the reason why we wanted to bring this up is when you go to the news story, the first thing that they show you is a picture of the entrance, one of the entrances, or maybe the only entrance, I don't know. I've never been there, to this mall. And on top of it, in big letters, it says American Dream. American Dream. And I said, oh my goodness. And then the place looks empty with just a police car and some traffic cones. Obviously because they must have closed off the place and all that. They evacuated it because of a bomb threat. And I said, oh yeah, that's interesting, because New Jersey, as we said before, is the colony that represented the American Dream. So on September 11th, 2023, when New Jersey died, it was when the truth took the American Dream out of America. This was, New Jersey represented the place of the dreamers who dreamed of great things in the midst of smallness. because New Jersey is, you know, it's right next to New York City, at least northern New Jersey. You know, I can see New York from I literally see it every day when I go on my lunch break and I go to the pier, which is a few blocks from where I live. So you can see all the buildings, you can see everything. It's, New Jersey represents the place of dreamers. And, so it was just to me like a manifestation of the American dream is dead. And it was, the emptiness now, the mall was evacuated, you know, the dream is gone. And now it's just, the American dream is just this emptiness, because there's nothing there. And this correlates with music and Taylor Swift, because as we've said, Taylor Swift has that dreamer personality. She has it for sure. She has that Joseph mantle on her, this mantle of many colors on her. I don't know how to explain it. And just like the Joseph of the Bible, the dreamer who was envied by his brothers and so forth. She has that mantle on her. And she's clearly an example of, you know, the American dream, you could say, in the sense of starting from humble beginnings and not being a billionaire. The first billionaire in history who has made his or her billion on music sales and music operations alone. So now she seems to be this big success. But in her success and all her music, there's just emptiness, and she doesn't realize it. But because it's all surface music that never goes beyond a certain level, at the end of the day, it's just emptiness. As empty as that mall that was evacuated because of the bomb threat, and the fact that this mall, the American Dream Mall, was in East Rutherford was to me not a coincidence either, because East Rutherford is where the Meadowlands are, and that's where MetLife Stadium is. The Meadowlands, MetLife Stadium, is where the New York Giants play. And it's interesting, New York City has two American football teams, but neither of them play in New York. They both play in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. And we talked about the Meadows, if you recall from other recordings, we talked about the Meadow and how it related to the death of America, and all that. So it's interesting that this place was in East Rutherford, where the Meadowlands are, is where this incident happened. So that's what we wanted to say. Eventually, no explosive devices were found, and the shoppers were allowed to return and all that. But I believe this is all a symptom of, like a manifestation of the emptiness. The American dream is gone, and now we're a land of emptiness. There is no dreaming anymore here. And part of why we are dead, as we've said with Taylor Swift, the superficiality of her songs comes from her telenovela anointing, if you can call it that, the telenovela theme that she has going on throughout her songs, and how her songs go nowhere, just like a telenovela, a soap opera, Hispanic soap opera. It's just this empty circle, a labyrinth, where you go in and get lost and go nowhere. And this is related to this story. Believe it or not, that I'm going to read right now. On November 18th, 2023, on thegatewaypundit.com, they posted a story that read, "Heartbreaking discovery made by girlfriend of former NHL player killed by opponent." So this is the story of this Adam Johnson, American who was playing in England, hockey in England. And we talked about it before, so we're not going to go into too many details about that. But he died in this freak, quote, accident where one of the other players, a Canadian called Matthew Pengrave, and Matthew is related to the Meadowlands because we had a posting on the website where these recordings are posted, that talked about the Meadowlands and in the context of someone named Matthew. So it's all related. So this Matthew Pengrave, this Canadian guy, a black Canadian guy, slashed the throat of this American and killed him right in the middle of a game, of a hockey game. And as I've had a chance to look at, I haven't wanted to look at the videos, but I've seen some stills of the incident just before it happened. And it does look like it was intentional. Like he was trying to, he was trying to block off the American, and he lifted up his skate on purpose. And I don't know if he really was aiming for the throat or not, but it almost looks like it. But regardless, he was eventually arrested, I think. He might still be arrested. In Britain, he was arrested for involuntary manslaughter. And who knows if it was involuntary or intentional. I don't know, but it was very reckless for sure. But I kept wondering what happened, you know, why he died. And then this story came up and it made me think about him again. And what they mentioned in this story is that it says here, senseless tragedies often make the world feel irredeemable. See, and that's the thing. These things happen and everybody thinks, oh, it's a senseless thing, but there's a reason behind it. And that's one of the things we want to emphasize in these recordings and on the website where we post these recordings. We talk about there's no coincidences. It's like everything happens for a reason. There is a purpose. There's a natural consequence. People say, why did this happen to me? Well, it happened because there's certain things that led to it, certain root issues that haven't been dealt with or that have been going on behind the surface that lead to this. It's not just happenstance. It's not just a coincidence or a senseless tragedy. There's a reason for it. It's just that we have to look hard and look and concentrate and look, and then we start seeing it. What they're trying to say here is, according to USA Today, 24-year-old Ryan Wolf, Johnson's girlfriend of 3 years, has since discovered an engagement ring in the apartment they shared. Family friends confirmed that Johnson, 29, had intended to propose to Wolf. And her name is Wolf, interesting. Ryan Wolf, that's her name. Grant Clafton, one of Johnson's former coaches, described the slain player as a joyful grump who eventually became just joyful. And we all know Ryan was the reason for that. She said, quote, I was looking forward to the life that Ryan and Adam, oh, I'm sorry, this is one of Johnson's former coaches speaking. He said, I was looking forward to the life that Ryan and Adam were creating and deserved, and my heart breaks for her, Clafton said at Johnson's memorial. We talked about him, Adam Johnson, representing someone who is trying to do a conquest or finish out a conquest that can only be done by being green, but whilst staying in black. And you may want to, we share more details on that in a previous recording, so I'm not going to go into that too much. But it's a figure of that is Napoleon. Napoleon was a guy who wanted to achieve a green conquest whilst staying black, and that's why he went into Russia. So there are two types of people who are stuck in black. Some to say, oh, I can finish out the job without going green, and they go boldly and rashly going into the conquest, and they get utterly devastated. And that's what happens to Napoleon, who when he tried to conquer Russia. And we all know the story of what happened when he did that. And then there are other people who are stuck in black who just don't do anything. And they end up regressing to the red stage. We talked about the white, the red, the black, and the green stage. And in this case, Adam Johnson is like a person who was staying black. And interestingly, also, Johnson is a name that I always associate with black people. Magic Johnson and other people. Every time I hear the name Johnson, I'm expecting to see a black person. But in this case, it was a white guy. This guy was black, and we explained why we kept talking about him being in black. And he was in a land of greenness in Nottingham, playing the Nottingham Panthers. So he was trying to go into a green land. He was playing for the Nottingham Panthers in a green place, while staying black. And that led to a tragic disaster. That's when he ran into a blade that cut his throat, just like Napoleon ran into this blade, Russian blade, that cut his throat. And I kept saying, why did this happen? And then as I thought about it, I realized, oh, I see what's going on. This guy was stuck in friends mode. And I don't know if that makes sense, but and by that I mean he was a person who was stuck in that world of social relationships and friends, and soulish relationships, and he never quite left that world, and he tried to go into a green place whilst being stuck in this mindset of social relationships. He thought that, you know, with his girlfriend, and I saw a picture of the two there, they made a beautiful, you know, very nice looking couple. So it's kind of sad in a sense they were already married, I would dare say, but, you know, had not been official yet, but, he was, trying to find, it's as if he was finding fulfillment in his life in a social relationship, in something at the emotional level. I don't know how to explain it. And he thought, I am fulfilled now, when he didn't realize there was much more to life than that. And wolf, you know, makes me think of a black wolf. Again, it's the same theme. Hers, the name of the girlfriend, or the one who was going to be his wife, or who was his wife for all intents and purposes, in my view. Ryan Wolf, you know, it's like they were stuck in black, and part of them being stuck in black is because they were trapped in this world of the social media, social relationships. The same world that Taylor Swift is trapped in. And that's why she, you know, she can't go into greenness, because she's stuck in black just like the rest of America, because she lives in that world of social media and Facebook and all that rubbish, all those meaningless exchanges of soulish emotional communion that go nowhere. And I think that's part of what led to this Johnson fellow dying. That he had something greater to aim for, and he didn't go over that barrier. He always stayed stuck in this world, and that's why he died. So we wanted to say that, and it's related to Taylor Swift, because of that. And by the way, 29 is age that, you know, is a very green number. If you go to the website where these recordings are posted, we talk about the number 29, and it has a very strong green flavor to it. it's related to earthquakes and agitations, deep agitations of the ground. So he was at that age where we're supposed to leap into greenness. But he held back. And because he held back, that's why he died. And he was still trying to move forward into green territory without, whilst holding back on going green. And that's why he died. And so, now another story I wanted to share that's partially related is, and I kind of, to be frank, I was kind of a little bit happy when I saw this. Partially sad, but not for the reasons you would expect. The headline said on the New York Post, former First Lady Rosalynn Carter dead at 96 days after entering hospice with husband Jimmy. So finally, the woman died, and I was happy for that. The only thing that saddened me is that the idiot husband is still alive. Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter is a he's supposed to be a Christian and all that, but he was always a compromiser, and he became this radical. He began to say all these radical liberal things. He hates Trump and he hates anything that's, you know, deeply conservative and he is buddy buddies with people who are very liberal, and so he's a very compromised son of a bitch. He's a useless life. He's a life that does not matter. And people praise him for his humanitarian work, and, you know, kudos to him for building houses. So there's a certain humility to him, and all that. That's wonderful. But it's helping at a very surface level. He never dealt with root issues in his life ever. You know, you can build a house, but if you don't deal with the root issues, then poverty and all these things that go on are not going to get solved. You do more for humanity if you try to deal with the root issues than trying to build a house for some family. It sounds so cold and harsh, but that is the reality. Because if you deal with the root issues, then you don't have to build one house for one family at a time. They will buy their own house, if you see what I'm saying. But he never had the courage. He was a coward. This man was a coward. Jimmy Carter, and I speak of him in the past tense, because to me, he's already dead. He's a cadaver, a walking cadaver, just like America. But he was always a coward. A man who didn't have the conviction to fight. That's why his presidency was so lame, you know, so weak and so pathetic. That's why the Iranians took the embassy and held it hostage for so many days, and they waited until Ronald Reagan got elected to let the hostages go, because they knew that Ronald Reagan was not going to play games. So this guy was always spineless and pathetic. A worthless existence. And I have to say personally, and I won't go into too many details, but this guy almost, his actions almost derailed my personal life. And I have to explain why. It's not that he knew me personally or something, but there was some policies that he put in place, idiotic policies. Idiotic in the sense that they were not tempered with wisdom, that almost affected me when I was a kid. And could have derailed my life to the point that there would have been no website where these recordings are posted. These recordings would never be posted. My whole life would have been thrown in a different direction had this guy succeeded, because he tried to kill me before I was born. And this sounds strange, but I say that in the sense that, and this all happened when I was 11. Almost turning, between 11 and 12 years old. Something very important was going to happen. And his policies were doing everything in their power to prevent it happening. And thankfully, by the mercy of the truth, there was a runner, a workaround that was done that allowed me to continue with my path without this son of a bitch interfering with it. And to be frank, when I was a kid, I didn't really understand it. I remember 1980, I was becoming aware of politics, you know, at that time. And I remember kind of almost being a little sad that he lost, even though when I was a kid, I was rooting for John Anderson, the third party candidate, neither Reagan nor Carter. In 1980, there was a guy called John Anderson who didn't win. I don't know why I was rooting for him. Maybe I was just because he was in third place and I was rooting for the underdog, or I don't know. But I didn't have any resentment against Jimmy Carter, and I kind of liked him for a while. And he did one good thing for America, but we won't go into that because he's not worth praising at this point. But the thing is that I didn't have any resentment against him until I later looked down on my life and realized, oh, this guy could have derailed everything. So he's a destructive influence. He was a dream killer. Let me put it that way. When we were talking about the American dream dying, he was a dream killer. But he's always praised as this wonderful man. But he was a very destructive force in American history. One of the worst presidents. I don't know why he's not being praised and, you know, with the passing of time, but I remember when I was a kid, you know, people will say, who are the worst presidents in American history? And Jimmy Carter will always be in the top three. Obviously, Andrew Johnson, the guy who came after Lincoln, would always be number one. And then maybe Herbert Hoover would come in, you know, the guy who was around during when the stock market crashed in 1929 and the Great Depression started. And then Jimmy Carter would always be mentioned as well. He's definitely one of the three worst presidents. I'd say he's number two, probably. Well, James Buchanan might take number two, I'm not sure, but he's definitely in the top three or four worst presidents of all time. Terrible piece of trash. And I'm glad that the wife is finally dead. And hopefully the son of a bitch will be dead soon. So I hope that I will be able to share that in some recording. At some point, that the worthless piece of dirt who was a dream killer is gone. Gone to wherever he has to go. And just as a final comment on this about the American dream, there was a headline on the dailymail.com that said, on the 21st of November, 2023, Taylor Swift for president. She and fellow pop star Beyonce trounce Bite Me, Trump, Harris, and other politicos in popularity stakes, proving 2024 race needs a, quote, shot in the arm. And I don't know, I just found this interesting, you know, that Taylor Swift for president, and she represents the American dream going nowhere. I don't know. I just found it interesting, the headline, Taylor Swift for president. And it also kind of shows this greatness, potential for greatness embedded in Taylor Swift, that they would even say that about her. And it's just a poll that was, it's not that she's being suggested as a potential presidential candidate, but what I'm trying to say is that there's something great, an aura of greatness about her. And it comes from that dream, that dreamer thing that's on her. But it's sad that she's a dreamer that's going nowhere. And it's kind of fitting that she represents the presidency, which is dead in America, more than Bite Me or Trump, you know, to the American people. So I just wanted to mention that. And not sure what else to make from that. Okay, so now let's start talking about a little bit about Taylor Swift more specifically. And I don't know if we're going to get to the songs, but I hope we do. There was a headline on the 18th of November. That was this happened a few hours after the last recording. We record these snippets in the wee hours of the morning, hours before we post them on the website where we post them. So it's not like we record them and then immediately upload them. There's a reason why we have to do that. And I usually do that in New York. And I'm not able to do it immediately for reasons too long to explain. It's more or less a technical issue. But the thing is that this headline came out shortly after the last recording. And it says, before we get to Taylor Swift, we need to mention this, and then we will talk about the story that I saw shortly after the recording. This story doesn't seem related to Taylor Swift, but it is. It says, driver of tractor trailer that struck and killed Massachusetts girl, 5, crossing road with her family won't be charged with crime because youngster was crossing on green light. This was posted on the 18th of November on thedailymail.com. It's a very sad story. This very pretty little girl was 5 years old. She was on her little scooter, and she was crossing the street on the crosswalk, and this lorry, this truck, a Cisco truck, not sure what Cisco is, but must be some sort of company, hit her. And she died. She was 5 years old. 5 is a number of grace and talent. Apparently the light turned green. She had the right of way, but the light turned green and the truck just saw the green light and said, let's go, and went forward. And he didn't see her because apparently, you know, he was from the truck was high above the ground. So he didn't see her below. When she was started to cross on the crosswalk, and he struck her and she died. And it's very sad story. This happened in a small town, in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is the place that represents, the visionary, qualities in America that died, on September the 7th. That was the second colony to die. The first one to die was Pennsylvania, then Massachusetts, then New York on September the 8th. And North Carolina died on the 18th of September. And that's completed the death of America. But the thing is that this little girl was on her scooter. And it's interesting that she was on her scooter, because I usually see, when I'm working, I work in front of a window on the third floor, and I look down, and sometimes I see little kids, little girls and little boys, you know, with their little scooter, and they look so cute and sweet, you know, going down, and sometimes they're ahead of their parents, and I don't know why, sometimes I start like interceding for these kids, like, oh, let them not, you know, get hit by a car when they get to the intersection or something, like, I get concerned about them, I don't know what happened with this little girl, that she probably got ahead of the person, that the adult she was with, and she was about to cross the street. She had the right of way, but apparently there was, I don't know what happened exactly, because the thing is that she got hit and she died, and the adult that was with her just was, you know, grieving over her, crying over her dead body on the street. It was very, very sad. Part of the reason why I'm saying this, you know, this is related to the death of America and the American dream. But the reason why I'm sharing this is that, let me just say, read some of the details about this story. It says here, citing a thorough and detailed police probe that included video from inside the food transport truck, he added the driver was stopped at the intersection. As he began to advance forward on the light turning green, he was unable to see Miss Olson, the little girl, traveling on her scooter in the crosswalk below. The driver is not impaired by any substances and immediately came to a controlled stop after the collision, unquote. The DA's office added that lawmen carried out toxicology screens on the driver in a mechanical inspection of the vehicle after he immediately stopped to cooperate with cops. This happened in Andover, Massachusetts, by the way. She was pronounced dead at the scene. Prosecutors also used several witness interviews when making their decision after several described a female relative cradling the child's lifeless body. Then it says, Tucker's statement did not release the driver's name as he does not face charges. The Democrat did, however. And it's interesting they mentioned that the guy was a Democrat, the DA. The Democrat did, however, tout how his office had shared the findings with the Olson family, whom he said were relieved to reach closure in the criminal investigation. But that, I think they will still pursue civil charges against the driver. Now, the reason why I wanted to share this story with you here is that, let me see if I can find it. For some reason I can't find it. Let me see. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Not sure why I can't find it when I do a search for it, but I just found it. It says, relatives describe Sydney, who had just started kindergarten, as a, quote, fiercely creative explorer who enjoyed making art, picking flowers, and the music of Taylor Swift. Now, you think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. And a fiercely creative, the creativity. We're talking about two things. We've been talking about the death of the American dream and the death of American creativity. And this little girl, at the age of five is a number of grace and talent. So this very graceful and talented little girl, who was fiercely creative, was killed by this truck when the truck saw the green light. I don't know if it's making sense. And the fact that she loved the music of Taylor Swift, I'm not saying Taylor Swift killed her, but I'm saying that her affinity for the music of Taylor Swift is like a manifestation of the connection of the deadness of the American music and the American culture and the American dream and American creativity. You see this and you think of it as a senseless tragedy, but it's not. It's the outgrowth of so many things that culminate that one moment with her crossing the street and the truck seeing the green light. So you think, oh, it's all just a terrible accident. No, it's the overflow of so many things. So if you had stopped one of the triggers at one of the points, this would have never happened. If America had reacted to the truth and responded, this girl would be alive. Because the effects of Taylor Swift on her would not have been there to kill her. It's not that Taylor Swift killed her. It's what Taylor Swift represents, if you catch what I'm saying. If the parents had understood, because I don't know why I get the feeling the parents are liberals, but if the parents had understood what needed to change, there would have been something different in their behavior, their action, and the little girl would not have been in that intersection at that time. She might have been the parent might have been right alongside of her to protect her from crossing the street, in front of the truck. So one thing led to another, and we see how these macro events that we complain and talk about have these consequences in these micro events in people's lives. If you see what I'm saying, it's all interconnected. So that's why we have to deal with these issues. As we speak them out, we have to deal with them and confront them, because they are the reason that lead, that the causes that trigger so many tragedies at the micro level. So that's why we wanted to talk about this. And and you know, the guy will not face charges. I really don't know. It seems like he cooperated, so he didn't just do a hit and run and all that. But still, it is a very sad story. All right. So now we will talk about Taylor Swift, and I don't know if we're going to get to the song we wanted to get to, but we'll try. So this is a story also on the 18th of November, posted the same day as the story of the little, of the little girl who sadly died in Andover, Massachusetts. And Andover makes me think of Handover, where you, you know, hand something over instead of fighting for it. I don't know. But the thing is that on the 18th of November, the shortly after we finished recording the previous audio snippet, this story came out on the dailymail.com saying, "Inside Taylor Swift's horror Brazil concert, where Ana Clara Benevides died of cardiac arrest. Footage shows Swifties lining up in 110 degrees Fahrenheit heat wave for hours before begging for water." And for those of you who do not speak Fahrenheit, let me just do the quick translation to centigrade or Celsius. It's 43 degrees centigrade or Celsius. That's how hot it was. 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And I imagine it's not 110 degrees Fahrenheit of dry heat like Phoenix. It's 110 degrees Fahrenheit of tropical humidity heat. So it must have been just overwhelming. So it says here, "Fans who endured Taylor Swift's tragic concert in Brazil have offered a glimpse inside the disorganized scenes and sweltering conditions that left a young Swiftie dead." So, and before the show, thousands of adoring fans waited outside of the Stadio Olimpico Nilton Santos in Rio de Janeiro for hours in temperatures exceeding 100 Fahrenheit, apparently battling to get seats as close to the star as possible. So what happened was that they apparently they did this first come, first serve, where you couldn't reserve a seat. So the only way you could get close to the stage, to get as close to Taylor Swift as possible, is if you held your seat. So it's not like you could buy a seat and then go sit in it at any time, because it was reserved for you. It was like whoever got the best seats got them because they got there first. So people just stayed in the queue because of that. And there were some other issues, and it's not worth even going to all the details of how, you know, the problems, the logistical issues that led to the death of this young lady. But it says it comes as the fan's name was Ana Clara Benavides, and she was 23, and 23 is the number, as we've said before, of the matriarchy. She fainted, it says here, while at the show, and tragically died with it believed she suffered a cardiac arrest amid the heat wave. And I, when I saw that, my first thought was the injection. I know the heat is bad. I once suffered heat stroke. I was playing football one day, soccer. That was a long time ago. I haven't kicked a ball in anger in a long time, and sadly, in a football match, a football game. But the thing is that I once was playing, and it was very hot, and I just fainted and fell on the ground. And that was a long time ago, and I might have been. I was older than 23 for sure, but I know what that is like. But I believe that she was, being 23, she should have been able to recover. But I am convinced that she died because she must have been one of, being a Swiftie, then she must be, you know, trying to be cool and be in the social media thing and be with it, you know, be with the crowd. So I'm pretty sure that she was one of the first ones to line up to get the injection, the mRNA gene therapy injection. And I'm pretty sure that's what killed her eventually. And that weakened her system. And that's why she died of the heart attack. And her boyfriend, Taylor Swift's boyfriend, Travis, is constantly promoting the injection. So it's related. So Taylor Swift doesn't know it, but she can, and I know, technically speaking, it's not her fault at all. It was the fault of the organizers and all that. But see, behind the scenes, things don't happen just for any reason. There was a reason. She is, playing the wife of a guy who is promoting the injections. So she represents the same spirit or mindset that led to the death of this girl. It's not a coincidence. And the fact that she was 23, that represents the matriarchal mindset that Taylor Swift is imbued in. And that's why her music is, is dead. It goes nowhere because it's imbued in this matriarchal mindset. And Anna, is a form of Hannah, the Greek word that means grace. I'm sorry, Hebrew word, Hebrew name or Hebrew word that means grace. So again, a person full of grace, just like that little girl, the graceful, that little girl who was five, full of grace. She was killed and she was a fan of Taylor Swift. This girl, Anna, whose name literally means grace and talent, was killed. And Benavides, if you break it down, bene makes me think of molto bene, as in, in Italian, which means good. And vides makes me think of vida, which means in several languages, including Portuguese, vida means life. So good life. So her good life was terminated by the matriarchal system because she submitted to it. She submitted to the matriarchal system, to the system of getting along, to being along. That attitude that you just follow the crowd, you want to be popular, you want to be accepted. And she took the shot because of that, and her good life was terminated because of that. And this happened in Brazil. And interesting, so when Taylor Swift went to Argentina, one of her concerts was stopped because there was lightning, angry lightning and storm and monsoon conditions and all this stuff that canceled that concert. And we explained why that happened. And it was almost like a reaction of the truth in anger to what Taylor Swift's presence in River Plate Stadium represented. But no one got killed. But now when she goes to Brazil, one person is killed because the whole place was filled with the environment of judgment, just heavy judgment. And why was it so strong in Brazil and not, it was in Argentina too, but in a different way. But why was it so heavy in Brazil? Because Brazil has a strong, I think Brazil is the only country that's still alive in the Americas. I'm still clinging to that. I don't know why, I could be wrong. But in the Americas, I think the only country whose calling is still alive is Brazil's. And that's why when Taylor Swift, this unholy music, came into Brazil, it died. And believe me, I don't think Taylor Swift is the devil or that she has horns or anything like that. It's not that. I still think she's a very talented person and all that. It's just that she doesn't realize it, but she brings with her a whole bunch of things that she has embraced. And she brings it with her without realizing it. And that all these things are unholy, or I don't know what the word is, but or other word other than unholy, but there's something wrong about it. And that's why when she arrived in Brazil, it led to this death. and you know, all these people trying to be as close to her as possible and not leaving their place in the queue. That's why they stayed in this hot sun all that time. It's this idea of, you know, trying to be the first to follow a trend, to be, you know, this competition. And Brazil has a strong component of the judgment personality. It's mostly conqueror with judgment. The three biggest or most relevant countries in South America used to be Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay. And they each had a combination of the three, like a pair of the three male endowments. Argentina was visionary and conqueror. Uruguay was judge and conqueror. I believe it was judge and visionary. And the other one, Brazil, was conqueror and judge. There's a strong judge personality in, it's very strong in the Brazilian culture, even though it seems like there's a lot of depravity in Brazil. But even in the midst of that depravity, you see a strong component, a judgment component. And I think that was part of why the judgment was so severe on this young girl, and it killed her. The thing is that, people say, oh, well, she, you know, it's another person who died because of somebody, you know, just trying to make money off of people. But I don't see Taylor Swift being callous, you know, about this. And then she wrote a letter, and I'm looking at it right now. It's in the same story that I'm reading from on the Daily Mail. She hand wrote a note, and it says, "I can't believe I'm writing these words, but it's with a shattered heart that I say we lost a fan earlier tonight before my show. I can't even tell you how devastated I am by this. There's very little information I have other than the fact that she was so incredibly beautiful and far too young. I'm not going to be able to speak about this from stage because I feel overwhelmed by grief when I even try to talk about it. I want to say now I feel this loss deeply, and my broken heart goes out to her family and friends. This is the last thing I ever thought would happen when we decided to bring this tour to Brazil." And I for some reason feel that these words are not just publicity, a publicity stunt. They are very real. I think she really, really feels bad about this. But I don't think she understands why it happened, and it would not have happened if she had a different mindset. If she wasn't supporting a guy who promotes the injections, it all just flows in together. So another victim, I just know she died because of the injection. She had a cardiac arrest. And I'm pretty sure that obviously the heat had a lot to do with it, but it triggered a weakened condition in her, weakened condition due to the injection. I know she died because of the injection, because it weakened her heart. She was just an accident waiting to happen. So we wanted to mention that. And then another story related to that, on the Daily Mail again, it says Taylor Swift postpones tonight's Brazil concert due to extreme temperatures. Just 1 hour before doors open and a day after fan 23, and they emphasize that, interesting, 23, died of cardiac arrest in sweltering stadium. So she canceled her concert. So again, it's her just not being callous about it. And she also said that she wanted to change the logistics and the organizers to call them out and kind of talk to them to change things to prevent this happening again. And then another headline related to that same situation, It says, this was posted on the 19th of November. So last Sunday, I think, last Sunday before this recording, it says, worrying clip shows Taylor Swift struggling to breathe at sweltering Rio show for fan 23. Again, they emphasize that in the headline, unknowingly, died of cardiac arrest. And then and I saw the clip of her. She's singing, and you can see her struggling to breathe. There was a portion of the show where she was trying to catch her breath. It says in the 11-second clip, Swift can be seen hurriedly taking 7 breaths before starting another of her hit songs. But you can see that she's like gasping for air. And interesting, they mentioned 7 breaths, and I know that is relevant too. But she was about to succumb. It's like the judgment atmosphere was over Brazil, and there was an unholy presence, an unholy music being played. Unholy not because it's evil per se. It's just that it's evil because it's lacking what is demanded of it. If you catch what I'm saying, sometimes you are wrong because not because of what you did, but because what you failed or were unwilling to do. And there's this Taylor Swift, this talent who's now a billionaire who succeeded so much, and has reached these heights of success, and it's as if the truth were hovering over her and saying, you're missing something. You're missing something. You're missing something. And if you don't give it, you are dead. And I don't know if she'll ever give it. I think, in a sense, maybe it's over for her, just as it's over for America. But it's as if the truth were saying, there's something missing in you. And however wonderful you think your music is, and however wonderful your fans think your music is, there's something missing. And you're not giving it to me. And she was struggling. And there's one picture of her lifting her head up to the sky, looking up to the sky as she's gasping. I don't know what that means, or if she's just looking up by coincidence, or if she was asking, her maker some questions. I don't know. Or asking for help. I don't know. She's supposedly a Christian, quote unquote. So who knows what was in her head at that moment. But and someone said here, she was hyperventilating to avoid passing out. Thank God the show was almost over, said Stephen Stewart. Interesting, they say thank God the show was almost over. And then it says, she pushes herself so much for her fans, and I applaud her for that, but she needs a break, especially in that heat, added Riley, whoever Riley is. And during that show, she was captured here, it says, tossing a water bottle out to an adoring fan in the audience. So she saw someone in need in the audience, and she stopped her in the middle of the show. She went and grabbed a bottle from on the stage, and she threw it, or she gave it over to, or she handed it over to be given to someone who was in need in the audience. So she's a person who cares. She's not just this heartless animal just trying to make money and being successful, like Rihanna and Beyonce. They're more evil. Taylor Swift has a more benign quality to her. There's a kindness in her. But all of that kindness and caring and emotion and empathy, all that server personality that goes on in her is useless if she does not take things to the next level. And that's the state of America. So let me just do this last headline again on the 20th of November, Daily Mail, again, .co.uk or .com, whatever. whatever you prefer. It says Taylor Swift makes tearful return to the stage in Brazil. Heartbroken star sings emotional tribute to fan 23. So they keep saying that. Who died in extreme heat after canceling show due to tragedy. So as you can see her crying. So she's very... So she's singing a song and she's emotional about it. And you see her crying. So you know that she cares. It's not like she couldn't care less, and it's just like a casualty on her way to her success or something, like collateral damage is the word. That's the phrase I was looking for. And apparently she sang something that says, "Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. You were bigger than the whole sky. You were more than just a short time." The 12-time Grammy winner crooned while visibly choked up. "I'm never going to meet what could have been, would have been, what should have been you, what could have been, would have been you." And it's so sad. This is a song you can sing about the little girl who was her fan. And I don't know, in a certain sense, she doesn't realize it, but these words apply to her and to the people who the generation who admires her and who follows her, and to America. She doesn't realize that. I mean, this is the only one of the few times where this is the first time actually that I've ever read or seen something where there's a depth to it, but it took the death of a person for it to come out, if you see what I'm saying. It says, "Goodbye, goodbye, you were bigger than the whole sky. You were more than just a short time. I'm never going to meet what could have been, what would have been, what should have been you, what could have been, it would have been you." And I almost feel like crying right now, because this is the worst for America. This is the first time that she ever tapped into what she could have been as a musician to the world. But instead, she's just this figure around which all this server attitude, the matriarchal soap opera telenovela attitude, swirls. Just like the water in a toilet bowl, just swirling and swirling, and it goes nowhere. But in this case, it took this death of this young girl, this Brazilian girl, for something in her to come out. That is there. I don't know. Maybe on a personal level, she will somehow wake up someday. I don't know. But at least now she represents the death of America, you know, and the day that the music died in America. So I guess we will. We have basically run out of time, but there were two songs we wanted to do. To mention, and including the second song. So I think what we're going to do is at least do one of the songs, and then get into the second song. Here is the song. This is not the actual song we wanted to get to eventually, but it's the one right before. So let's do it here very quickly. I'm going to play 30 seconds of the song, and then we'll talk about it very quickly. I hope you were able to hear it. The name of the song is Sail On, and it's by the Commodores when Lionel Richie was still with them. This song has a lot of depth to it. So we'll read the lyrics here. It says, sail on down the line. I'm reading it from genius.com. Sail on down the line, about a half a mile or so, and don't really want to know where you're going. Maybe once or twice, you see, time after time, I try to hold on to what we got, but now you're going. And then it says, and I don't mind about the things you're going to say, Lord. I gave all my money and my time. I know it's a shame, but I'm giving back your name. Yeah, yeah. And then it says, yes, I'll be on my way. I won't be back to stay. I guess I'll move along. I'm looking for a good time. And then it says, sail on down the line. Ain't it funny how the time can go? All my friends say they told me so, but it doesn't matter. It was plain to see that a small town boy like me just wasn't your cup of tea. I was wishful thinking. I gave you my heart, and I tried to make you happy, and you gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't hard to say, would you please just go away, yeah, yeah. And then it says, I've thrown away the blues, I'm tired of being used. I want everyone to know I'm looking for a good time. Good time, yeah. And then it says, sail on, honey, good times never felt so good. Sail on, honey, good times never felt so good. Sail on, sugar, good times never felt so good. And then it finishes out saying, sail on, sail on, sail on. So again, this we always emphasize how all these lyrics always take you somewhere. So it's not just going in circles, and they take you somewhere. So literally, this song says, sail on, you know, go forward. And it's a song about separation. And it makes me think, yeah, time has basically run out, but we'll try to say some things. Maybe we'll continue in the next recording. But when I would listen to this song, at the beginning, I would just listen to the lyrics, because this is the power of the music from the past, from America's past, because now America's dead. But when America was still alive, its music spoke even without the lyrics. So you could listen to the lyrics and get an impartation of something. So I would listen to the lyrics and to the song, but the song was what was ministering to me, the music itself. And I wasn't paying too much attention to the lyrics. But then one day I started to kind of listen to it more closely. And when I would hear this line, I would hear something else. And the line that says, you know, I don't mind about the things you're going to say, Lord. I gave all my money and my time. I know it's a shame, but I would hear, but I'm giving you back your day. Yeah, yeah. And even now when I listen to the version that I, which I think is the original version that I have on my phone, and I listen to it over and over again, I keep hearing, but I'm giving back your day, not your name. Now, the thing is, just for context, this song was written shortly after Lionel Richie's first divorce. So it's a song about divorce, about separation. And some people also were saying that this was apparently the last song that he wrote with the Commodores. And he was also having creative differences with them, and he was about to separate with them. So maybe he didn't tell them, but this song was apparently also about him separating himself from the Commodores. So it's a song about separation. So when you see the thing about, but I'm giving you back your name, you think about, oh, you know, the wife taking back her maiden name after the divorce. And also a person was commenting online, was saying, and it's also a reference to him giving the Commodores back their name. Like, he's not going to fight for the name or for the rights of their music. Like, you know, you can keep all your music and all your rights. I'm just going to go my own separate solo way. So in that sense, it makes sense. And I kept looking on all the websites looking for a website that maybe had a different line here instead of name saying day, but they all say name. So apparently that's the official word in these lyrics, but I'm giving you back your name. But I kept hearing giving you back your day. And that made me think, because at the beginning of this part, it says, and I don't mind about the things you're going to say, Lord. So why does he say Lord? As if he's talking to a god or a master. I gave all my money and my time. And it started to make me think of the people who go to church Sunday after Sunday. And, gave all my money and my time. People who go to church faithfully on Sundays, it's like it eats up their whole day. It just consumes them, especially the ones who are dedicated to their Christianity, or to God, or to their Christian God. It just eats up their day. And so it just made me think of someone leaving the church. That's what it made me think of. So the word Lord, you can take it to mean God, or you can take it to mean the master of the church, who is the pastor. So it's as if you can take this to say, like, people who've been giving and giving of themselves, their money and their time, but it was all just for naught. So there comes a point where you go, I can't invest in this anymore. I have to walk away. And the problem is, a lot of Christians in the matriarchal system never walk away because they are married to the system, and they feel, they derive an identity from it, and they can't let go of it, because it's like, if I don't go to church on Sundays, what do I do? And what do I do to exercise my Christianity, my relationship with God? It's all in the context of the church. If I don't go to church, I'm not doing anything for the Lord. So they just stay trapped in that system. They never walk away. And that's what it made me think about. But then I realized, when I keep listening to the song, there's the second segment says, the second paragraph or verse, whatever, says, yes, I'll be on my way. I won't be back to say, I guess I'll move along. I'm looking for a good time. But when I hear it on my phone, I hear a good tie. As if Lionel Richie gets lazy and doesn't finish out the word. Instead of saying time, he just says tie. Just like with name, it's like he got lazy with the M at the end and just says nay, which sounds like day. So that's my explanation for why I hear that. But regardless, when I feel like I'm singing it to America when I read the lyrics. I gave you my heart, I try to make you happy, and you gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't hard to say, would you please just go away? And it says also here, it was plain to see a small town boy like me just wasn't your cup of tea. I was wishful thinking. So I was thinking wishfully. That's what I take from that last sentence. A small town boy like me, because that's what America was waiting for, is this big savior, big time savior, popular, likable. And they didn't realize that the dreamers, the small town boys, were the ones who were coming to the rescue with the message that was going to save this nation. But they were just not interested. The Christians in the American matriarchal system were looking for some person. And every time, they would hear someone, they would ask, how big is your ministry? How large is your church? Do you have a tax covering for your organization? All these simplistic things. When it was the small town boys who were going to save the land. And when he says, I'm looking for a good time, it's also the thing, we talked before about the willingness to suffer, to endure the pain. We talked about that in the previous recording, but there's another side to it. There's a point where you start suffering for no reason at all. And what, especially, for example, in the church system, the matriarchal church system, they always emphasize sacrifice, sacrifice, give for the cause, give for the Lord, give for the Lord. And it's just pain, pain, pain. And then people feel like they're doing something with their lives because they're suffering. But there comes a point when the suffering has to be to produce some sort of life and prosperity and flow. And I don't mean just material prosperity. I mean more than that. But if you invest, 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 and there's nothing, the ground just yields nothing, you can't be masochistic. There's a time where you go, no, I'm looking for a good time. Something like, something that produces life and power and liberty, and where you experience truth. And you just can't be investing just for the sake of investing and feeling good about yourself just because you're giving yourself away unnecessarily. To something that's not worth investing in. And conservatives just kept investing in this sterile land of conservatism and Christians in their matriarchal system, all investing in that. And it just produced nothing. And it went nowhere. And that's why America died. And so even as we talk about the need to experience the depth of the pain and the emptiness and all that, it doesn't mean we just have to go masochistic, full-blown masochistic, and just go to see where we can suffer more. Sometimes you have to give and give, and then you realize, no, there's nothing more to give. I'm not going to give anymore because I'm not going to be in perennial torment and suffering and sadness. It's not worth it. So then you have to walk away. And that's what American conservatives never did. So another thing that, well, there are more things to say, but I do believe that, more things to say about this song, but I think time has ran out. We've run very long, and we'll continue with this song hopefully in the next audio recording, and then we'll get to the song we wanted to get to. Thank you very much for listening.